Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Project Zion podcast. This is Brittany Mangelson, and I will be your host today. And I am thrilled to be doing this episode. It's been a long time coming. If you follow us on Facebook or if you came to our Lunch and Learn at World Conference, you're already aware of this news. But we have a new host, a new co-host for the podcast, and it is the one and only Linda Booth. So today I have on Linda, and we are going to just get to know her a little bit better, introduce her to the podcast listeners. Not that I don't feel like she needs a very strong introduction, because I think people, for the most part, are well aware of who she is. But we do have seekers and new members that listen that might not be familiar with Linda and her story. So, Linda, thank you so much for being here and for saying yes to Project Zion.
Absolutely. I'm excited about it. And I've already been excited for my very first gift to Project Zion, which was the interview that I did with President Steve Veazey concerning the words of counsel that he shared at the 2000 World Conference. So I am excited about providing other opportunities, but a little bit about myself. I guess for the last 22 years, I've been a full-time minister for Community of Christ. And in that role, I've served as one of the first two women ordained in the Council of 12 Apostles. I served as the president of the council for 6 years. I've traveled in many places around the world and throughout the United States, and have been blessed by the incredible stories that I've heard of how God's touch through the power of the Holy Spirit and through people's lives have helped to transform others and connect them in a deeper relationship with God and each other. And so that's part of my story. In my family, I'm known as a wife of almost 52 years. We have three grown sons and daughter-in-laws and three grandsons. And I work in the community and do various volunteer kinds of things in the community. And what my hope is, as I've been praying to God about what God wants me to do as I've retired at this last World Conference, the 2019 World Conference, I'm having a sense of being called to start a new expression of ministry in the area in which I live. And so I don't know where that's going to go, but I'm looking forward to where it will lead me.
Well, and you seem to be a doer, which is really exciting. So I'm sure whatever you have cooking up will bear many good fruits. And I'm excited to see what happens and what you do. So Linda, I want to just roll it back a little bit. I'm curious to just know maybe a brief history of your time in the church. I don't know much about that. Did you grow up Community of Christ? Where did you grow up? What did your faith experience as a kid and young adults look like?
Certainly. I was born and raised in the church. My father was a 70. In fact, when he died in 2016, he was the longest serving 70 in the history of Community of Christ. My mother was a doer. She was involved in the community and schools and everything. She just was very involved in justice issues, peace issues. She was a very spiritual woman, as were my grandparents. When I hit the age of 18 and began to explore in university life what it meant to be a Christian, I started reading different philosophers, and I began to question everything I had ever been taught. Not only did I question, but I rejected that there was a God, and I wondered if there was a man named Jesus. I thought he was certainly not divine. He was just a man, if he even lived. And so that broke my parents' hearts and my grandparents' hearts. And I married my husband, who was born and raised an atheist. And we had a great life. We got married. We had three children. And life was good. And he worked with a man named Harold who started inviting him to something called Marriage Encounter. And it's something that he and his wife had gone to, and they loved it. And they were just rabid about it. And they kept saying, you've got to go, you've got to go, you got to go. And they just bugged us so much. Finally, we went just to get them off of our backs because we decided we didn't need to go. Harold said it was all about communication, and Doug and I are great communicators, so we didn't think there was any reason why we needed to go. And so we went to this strange place, a monastery in Kansas City, Kansas, and we discovered when we got there that it was a silent retreat, and that threw us off, and we just wrote letters to each other. And but the end of that monastery retreat time was to write love letters to God. And at first we were put off by that, but the more we got into it, something happened. And we came home and Doug said, I think we need to find a church. And he said, you know, he had been touched by something he didn't understand. And I had been touched by the Holy Spirit, a reminder of what I had missed, even as good as my life was. And so he said, where do you want to go to church? And I said, well, let's go to the Catholic Church because that's where our experience had been. And he said, no, let's try out your church. So we looked up the address. We lived out in the country in Spring Hill, Kansas. We drove to the church. We got a babysitter for the boys the next day. We went to the congregation, and they just loved us into the fellowship. And as a result of that, my husband was baptized, our children were all baptized, and that's the end, not the end of the story, really, the beginning of the story of my interaction. And that's why I'm so passionate about congregations and people being invitational, because I recognize that God had a plan for my life. And if we had gone to that little congregation and had not received that warm welcome and the love and inclusion of our family into that family, I don't know where I would have ended up. It would have maybe been in a different place.
Yeah, that's really interesting to see how that all unfolded for you. I actually think maybe I had heard bits and pieces of that story a little bit along the way, but how impactful just to know that one congregation and their openness and being welcoming was able to transform your family's life. And then, I mean, not to make you feel weird, but like, what a gift your ministry has been to the church. And so,
well, it was a gift to our family. And you know what? The reason why I was reticent about going back to my church is because the church I experienced as a child, I made the judgment that they were very judgmental and that they were so structured in what they believed, and I didn't want to go back into that. I had a sense even in that weekend that there was something spiritually being awakened in myself, and I didn't know if I needed a community to continue to have that spirituality blossom within me. So when my husband suggested going to church, he was like, well, wait a minute, we might be able to continue having these kinds of experiences as a couple. But when I went into the community, I realized how critical it was to have that nurturing, not only for our Doug and myself, but for our three sons.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm curious, too, about your entering into ministry, what that looked like and when that happened. You know, when were you ordained? All of those details.
Yes, well, that's kind of everybody's story is a little bit different. When I was driving to the University of Kansas, taking coursework down there from my home in Olathe, when I heard over the radio that World Conference, that fateful World Conference, had heard the words of inspired words calling for women to be ordained. And I remember stopping in the parking lot in awe and wondering if I could even go to class because I was so taken with this wonderful news that Community of Christ was going to be open to the ordination of women. The reason why it struck me so much is about 3 years before, I'd had this really weird dream, and I'm not much of a dreamer. I mean, I have dreams, but I don't remember them. And I dreamt that this older man in our district or the region in which our congregation was situated, Myron had said to me, you need to think about being in the priesthood. And I woke up and I was just like excited. And I thought, because I had never thought about women in the priesthood, quite honestly. And I kept thinking about it. I was just filled with such joy. And then I thought, oh, this is your ego speaking. This is an ego thing. And so back off on this. So when I heard that in the car, I thought, oh my goodness, is it beginning? Is something happening? And so I was excited and prayerful about it. And then in our congregation, our pastor, a man that I had a great deal of respect for, a man who looked like my grandfather, in fact. And so I had that connection too, because he reminded me of my grandfather that I loved. He asked to have lunch with me. And I didn't think it was a priesthood call, but what I thought it was, that he was going to ask me to do something in the congregation. Because of the gifts that I have, I had been asked to, long before women were even thought of going into the priesthood, I'd been asked to pray and even give testimonies and plan services. And our congregation was pretty progressive. And when I say that, it sounds so weird, because now women do everything in congregations, but back then they didn't. And so I had been asked to do a variety of things. But this pastor, when he came in, he never asked me to do anything. So I thought, oh good, he's going to ask me to do something. And we sat down, and the conversation was very bizarre. And he said, Linda, I want you to know that I'm going to be asking women, presenting their calls to them, but you will not be called to the priesthood. And I can't even describe what I felt in that moment. It just was just very upsetting. And as I drove home, I thought, oh my goodness, I had that experience, and I was supposed to be preparing for priesthood, and maybe I've offended God in some way. And so I kept it to myself, and I told my husband, and he was furious, and he said, what do you mean? He's giving you a non-priesthood call. They're not supposed to do that. And so the more I thought about it, the more angry I got. And I'd wake up in the night and think, I needed to tell him this, but I didn't, hadn't told him. And when I went to church on Sunday morning, I was filled with such hurt and anger that I could look at him. And one Sunday, I couldn't take communion. It was the first time in my life that I couldn't take the bread and the wine. So I went home and I knelt beside my bed and I cried. And I said, God, I am so sorry. What have I done? And these words came to me, words that have helped me in my ministry. And the words were, do not allow your hurts and frustrations to separate you from the people you're called to serve. And so in those words, I understood that there was a call for me, but I was not to allow this experience to separate me from that call, nor from preparation for that call. Interestingly enough, about a year later, after the first women were called in our congregation, this same man did call me to the office of elder. And so that's my background into the call. So I was called to elder. And then a few years later, I was called to the office of high priest. And then I was asked to serve as a counselor to the president of the high priest quorum. And then there's experiences that go along with that too. But that's how it sort of came to be in my ministry. But you know what? I was always taught as a child that all of us have ministry. I was taught that even before, not women, obviously women didn't have, quote, ministry, but we were all had ministry to give, that we were all to love and to care for and to speak and witness of. And so ministry for me was something that I thought was inherent in who you were as a person, whether or not you were ordained or not. But with women and the ordination being ordained, that just changed the way in which all of us viewed our role as ministers.
Wow. I was trying really hard to keep a straight face as you were telling that story, because I think I would have been crushed having that experience with a pastor. I think initial response would be like, okay, sir, please keep that to yourself. I mean, Like, why? Oh, you know, bringing you into that conversation to just say, but not you, you know?
Yes. Not you, because it, not only that, he said, I think you have been running for priesthood. Like it was some kind of a political role that you wanted. And it was like, but I haven't been. I've only been doing what people have asked me to do.
Yeah.
Because I had been up front quite a bit. But it was only, I hadn't asked to do it. I had been asked to do it. So, I mean, it was just as if whatever I had done in my preparation for what might come had been wrong and had and was now being viewed as something totally different than what I thought was occurring. So, and the fact that he looked like my grandfather just made it even worse. So.
But I think honestly, that is an experience that a lot of women, maybe particularly women, can relate to. I know that I've even gotten pushback from family and friends and people in and out of the church who have maybe made assumptions about my ministry when
yes.
For me, the reality is I've almost run away from just about everything I've said yes to as far as the church goes. So yeah, but there is that, that tension of how do you say yes to the call and how do you develop the call that you feel within you and yet not look like you're lobbying for priesthood or you're not trying to make it political. And yes. That's a fine line to walk. So bless
you. Yeah, it was, especially back then when it was so new and it was an exciting time. But for me, it was also very troubling because of that experience. Yes.
Yeah.
And so then, in 1994, I shared this at the World Conference in my departing words before I stepped down off the rostrum as an apostle. I shared the experience that I had in 1994 when I was serving as, I was going to be leading some of the high priest quorum sessions during World Conference in 1994. And I felt so inadequate to do them because they did Robert's Rules of Order, and that's not something that I particularly like to do. So I boned up on that and I prayed and prayed and prayed, and that experience was just fabulous. The spirit was moving in that high priest quorum. We met in the temple sanctuary. There were lots of people there. Everything went well. And then that last Sunday was the dedication of the temple. And there was such a huge crowd of people for that. Some met in the temple, others of us met in the auditorium. And I was walking in the west corridor of the auditorium and I heard, you're going to sound like I'm really mystical. I don't think I am, but there are times in your life when God needs to hit me with a 2x4 because otherwise God will not get my attention. And so I had this sense, and these words came to me, not in a voice, but words that came into my very being. And it was like, you need to begin to prepare to serve as my apostle. And instead of going into the auditorium to watch the wonderful dedication and participate in that, I turned around and got in my car and I drove home and I cried and I said, God, you can't make me do this. That message was meant for somebody else. I cannot do this. And a couple of days later, I got up enough nerve to tell my husband, Doug, and he laughed at me and he said, you don't need to worry about that. You don't even work for the church. It's going to work out. And so for 2 years, I would wake up in the middle of the night worrying. I had a list of why I couldn't do it. And finally, after 2 years of arguing, literally arguing with God, arm wrestling with God, I just said, okay, if this is what you want, God, you know, I promise to do what all I can to serve your people, but you must promise to be with me in the midst of that. And so when I went to work for the church so that was in 1994, I had the experience. In 1997, I went to work for the church as an assistant director of communication, because that's what my background is in. And when Grant McMurray, President McMurray, called me into his office in that winter of 1998, I was prepared to say yes because of having struggled with the call. And it wasn't easy, particularly in the beginning, as a female apostle, because there were a lot of people that delighted in it, but in particular, some elderly men, I remember, they would come up to me after I led a meeting or preached, and they would say, I think this is going to work out. You know, it's like they were not quite sure if it was going to. And then when I came in, I supervised about 40 to 50 men, ministers, who had been ministers full-time for the church for a long time. I really think many of them thought they should have been called into the Council of 12 Apostles and not this woman who had no field experience and was brand new. So it was not difficult, but it had its challenges, I must say, in the very beginning.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what that was like. And I've wanted for some time to have you and Gail, the other woman who was called to the Council of 12 at the same time on. So I'm still hoping that we can make that happen, to just to hear more of that narrative. Because it's history, and it's the reality that you two walked into. And I, for one, am very, very grateful you did. But yeah, I can only imagine how difficult that was, especially in certain congregations or areas that maybe weren't as receptive to your ministry. So I guess now, do you want to talk about being president of the Council of 12, and maybe we can jump into some of the more recent ministry that you've done and then talk about what you are bringing to the podcast, or should we jump straight to what you're bringing to the podcast?
Well, it's up to you. I'll try to be brief about what the Council of 12 leading as the president. The Council of 12 elects their own president, and so I was elected to serve, as I said, for those 6 wonderful years. I served with the most diverse Council of 12 in the church's history, with, you know, someone, a female from French Polynesia and an African apostle in Wales and Canada and Central America. And we spoke 3 languages when our council room didn't have a translation. And I asked one of our apostles if we could use their office, and we turned that office into 3 translation booths. And so during all of those meetings, we had translations of French and Spanish going on all the time. And to reach consensus in that diverse body of 12 men and women is quite challenging because of the perspectives everybody has and the experiences. But we developed a system of consensus where we learned to listen to one another, to try to understand, and so we walked through that together. And I love serving with those people. They are amazing, and our 2 new apostles are amazing as well. In fact, even in retirement now, I'm still serving as a member of the First Presidency team. In fact, I'm talking right now in my office in the First Presidency suite, which was Wally B. Smith's old office. So I'm in that office in this moment, and I just received my itinerary because I'm working and mentoring Catherine, who's from Africa, and in the Council of 12, and I'm going to be traveling with her in Malawi and Zambia in August for almost 3 weeks. And so I'm continuing to do special projects for the First Presidency, as well as mentoring and new missional expressions and a variety of things. And I'm also going to be working on different projects, having come from World Conference and some of the things that they've asked the First Presidency to study and to provide for the church. So I'm excited about that, but I'm really excited about podcasting because I presented a couple of ideas to Brittany and to Robin Linkhart, and they've agreed these ideas might make good podcasts. And so I have 2, one of which is called Coffee Connect. And I've already done one, and soon we'll do many more. And they're little short snippets of stories of God's interaction with people and how we are connected one to another through story, as well as a part of God's great narrative that extends throughout the centuries as God has interacted with people. So I'm pretty excited about that one. And then after I had done the interview with President Veazey about the words of counsel, I sent an idea to Brittany and Robin about something called Coffee Buzz. And I said, what if I talked each month to one of the three members of the first presidency? So one month I would talk with Steve about an important issue or what was going on in the church. The next month with Scott Murphy, and the next month with Stacy Cram, and then do it again all through the year. And of course they like that idea, and I'm looking forward to having those conversations with the three of them, because quite honestly there is a lot going on in the life of the church, and it's important that we all know what's going on, but also to be engaged in that conversation and that understanding of where God's leading us. So we called it Buzz because it's really up-to-date stuff that's going on right now, things that the church needs to consider, things that the church needs to discern. And I believe that conversation will be very beneficial.
So when Linda says that we thought it was a good idea, I should confess that I had an embarrassingly amount of exclamation points in my response, because I think it's a great idea. When we started this little podcast, I didn't really know where it was going to go or if we would even be able to reach leadership in the first presidency. And that obviously is a reality for us. And I'm just really grateful for the connections that you bring to the podcast and the stories. If I recall correctly, some of your Coffee Connect episodes are going to come out of your latest book, which features stories from your travels and your ministry. So they're going to have a wide variety of content and just ways that people connect with God. So I am really looking forward to it, and I cannot overstate how many exclamation points I put in that email.
Well, I will admit that's the most exclamation points I've ever seen in a short email that I've ever received. And something else I'm excited about, I'm also working on a second book. And that's in collaboration with Jimmy and Jared Munson and the ministry they're doing in Chattanooga. And I've already got a working title for that. It's called The Upside Down Congregation. And it gives an idea of what people might be able to do and take from some of the things that are happening. Because in that congregation, the ministry is 24/7 and it's outside of the walls of the congregation. So, and I'm going to bring other examples of other congregations that are doing the same into that book. So it's The Upside Down Congregation. So I'm pretty excited about that too.
I'm really excited about that. I've been watching what their congregation has been doing from afar, and I've been so inspired at what a group of people are able to do inside their community. So I'm thrilled. All the exclamation points. Well, Linda, you know, I just wanted to bring you on really quickly to give us a high level overview of who you are. And the good thing is we're going to learn lots more about you, because that's what some of your stories are going to be about, is your travels and your ministry. So I'm sure that we are just cracking open the shell of who Linda Booth is, which I'm really excited to keep discovering ways that God has moved and danced through your life, and how you've been able to share that with people in the church and just in the world. So I just, again, want to thank you for the gifts that you are going to bring to Project Zion, and I'm really excited to have you on board.
Thanks, Brittany. I'm excited too.
Take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use. And while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.